KBOO.org/evening news. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. As Oregon legislators debate the effects of Measure 110 and whether to recriminalize drugs, we're taking a look at the other half of the landmark measure, the influx in funding for substance use disorder treatment and recovery services. It's meant to help build a continuum of care for people, and it represents a historic investment in a long-neglected field in Oregon. Shannon Jones Isidore is the CEO and founder of the Oregon Change Clinic, a recipient of those funds. Their treatment and temporary housing services are specifically aimed at serving BIPOC Portlanders. I spoke with Shannon to learn more. Well, welcome. Thank you for being here. Can you tell me a little bit about Oregon Change Clinic?
Absolutely. We are an outpatient treatment facility. And we do treatment for those that are working through substance use disorder and mental health issues, so mild to moderate mental health challenges. Our target population, those that we work primarily with, are Black, Indigenous people of color. The majority of our clients, Althea, I would say, are African American men.
And how did Oregon Change Clinic get started?
I have a background in psychotherapy, so my degrees and credentials are all in psychology and therapy, and so I started working in the field of psychology and treatment facilities and that. And so I'm also a United States Marine Corps veteran. And so I had gone to the Marines and then also college. So I got to a point out there where I was working in the field of psychology. And I started making money and wasn't sure exactly what to do with the money. How to invest the money. So I'd heard of 401ks and IRAs and that. And so I go to a seminar on how money works. And I end up at the seminar, I meet a Marine who's the vice chairman of the company. And he says, you know, I can show you how to get in the investment world. And at the time, I said, no, I'm a psychologist. That's not what I do. And he says, well, you can use all of your psychology skills to help people with saving and investing money. After a few months of speaking with me about that, I end up changing fields and go into the investment field. I open an investment firm and I'm traveling from California to Portland back and forth because this is my hometown. I'm a native of Portland, Oregon. And my grandmother ends up needing more care here. So I make the decision to move back to Portland. I thought, Althea, that I was going to open a financial firm here in Portland and still have the one in California. But it wasn't going in that direction. But organizations that would find out about my background in psychology, a lot of the large organizations here, would jump at the chance to hire me or bring me on as a consultant. So I started working as a consultant and a director at various organizations in behavioral health. That's when I realized that there was a real need for a culturally specific treatment facility. So in 2021, I opened Oregon Change Clinic as a culturally specific outpatient treatment facility here in Portland, Oregon.
Wow, that's what a tale.
Oh, I didn't mean to take you all
no,
around.
No.
Thank you.
Can you tell me some of the things that in being like a consultant and starting to get involved in the field of behavioral health, was there a particular moment that made you realize that there was a need for culturally specific services, or was it a pattern of things that you were seeing?
It was definitely a pattern of things that I was seeing. One, that there were small amounts of people of color, African Americans particularly, that were in treatment, and their success rates were low. So the number of people completing treatment. And then I would see how they were constantly being discharged. So there were conversations in several meetings about this, like, why are people of color discharged more frequently than people who are not people of color? Part of it had to do with expectations, had to do with trainings, misunderstandings. So there were various reasons. And a lot of the organizations and myself, as a director of those organizations or a consultant, we would work through them, or at least try to work on them. There was also a small amount of number of clinicians, so counselors, therapists, as well as people in high leadership positions, directors and executives.
Can you tell me, so you mentioned the outpatient treatment, and there's, in your website, you kind of describe the sort of three component pieces of what Oregon Change Clinic does, substance use disorder and mental health treatment, TMS treatment for depression and temporary housing. Can we address each of those and you tell me a little bit about what they are and maybe how they fit together?
Absolutely. I will say that when we opened Oregon Change Clinic, it didn't look the way that it looks now. Yeah. So opened Oregon Change Clinic thinking that we would be a culturally specific outpatient clinic right here in Northeast Portland. And we were helping people who had substance use disorder challenges as well as mental health challenges. And we thought we'd be open Monday through Friday. And pretty much that was what we thought that the clinic would look like. And we would do treatment, like people would be in our treatment for about 90 days. Yes, it was 90 days at the time. What we quickly realized is that people needed housing. And so when people would come to our clinic for treatment and they did not have housing and needed housing, they were experiencing houselessness, their treatment was inconsistent, it was sporadic, they would sometimes sleep at our front door just to make sure that they were there when we opened. So we started housing people in affordable motels, cheap motels around town. Some people were in Beaverton, some people were on Interstate, some people were at the Sixth Avenue Motel. So we were doing our very best because it wasn't in our original business model. And so that's when I knew that we needed to add this housing component. So we go to one of the motels that we were housing people and we asked, how could we just take over the entire motel? I mean, it was a big vision at the time. And like I said, it wasn't in our original business plan, but we knew that was going to be the way to really help people. So after much negotiations, we end up taking over the entire Sixth Avenue Motel. I also needed to control the environment because I was housing people at all these places around town and I couldn't control the environment. And they're in the room next door to someone who's renting the room by the hour. And so I wanted to see how we can give people the best opportunity for success. So in taking over the entire motel, we weren't sure exactly, because it needed renovation. It needed quite a bit of support. So we decided to do that anyway, even though we didn't have the funding or money to make it all happen. We just knew it was going to be important in helping people through their recovery journey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Another thing that you had mentioned was also some of the other treatments that we have. So TMS treatment stands for transcranial magnetic stimulation. And Althea, that is a treatment for those who are experiencing major depressive disorder or a chronic depression. And so what we realized is that oftentimes clients who are coming for substance use disorder treatment are also experiencing mental health issues and challenges. So we wanted to see how we could do our very best to help people with as many issues as we could, you know. And mental health was we were seeing over and over again, was going hand in hand, side by side with those who were experiencing substance use disorder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Oregon Change Clinic received funding from Measure 110 through the Behavioral Health Resource Network Allocation, or BERN, funding. Yes. Can you tell me a little bit about the process of getting those funds to Oregon Change Clinic and what it's allowed you to do?
Yes, the process in receiving the funds was quite extensive. I mean, it took, although the measure had passed some time ago, we had ended up receiving the funds a year later. But however, when we received the funds, quite grateful, we were. What we were able to do and still able to do with the funds is it helped with the housing. So if I go back to that part of the story in the Sixth Avenue Motel, we knew that we were going to renovate pieces of it. We knew that we needed to take the carpet up and we needed to paint the interior and get it to be this kind of livable space. And once we received the money, we were able to expand on that. So we could do, it has two floors to it. We knew we could do the bottom level. Measure 110 helped us to be able to renovate the entire motel. So that was quite exciting for us. Also, what it helped us to do is our initial treatment model was that people would be in treatment out there with us for 90 days. We've been able to extend that people are now in treatment with us for 6 months.
And what kind of impact does that have, that longer treatment period?
Yes, because one of the things that I think people may not know, or some may, is that we're looking to change behavior as well as patterns, as well as environments, as well as ways of thinking and being. And it takes a little bit of time. So it's not only about living a drug-free life or sobriety and that, but rather how can we change people's cognitive thinking? How can we change people's patterns? How do we change their associations and mindsets? And so it takes a little bit of time for that. So what we're able to do is we have our program is an intensive outpatient treatment program. And for us, what that looks like out there is that clients are with us for around 14 to 16 hours a week. And in 14 to 16 hours a week, five days a week, they have experiences that are, they're in group treatment and individual treatment. And so they're a part of our wellness program, which may look like them doing acupuncture and yoga and mindfulness. They also have psychoeducation, where they learn more about the impacts of drugs and chemicals on our body and our mind. They are also in substance use and mental health awareness groups. They are also experiencing, they meet with mentors who help them with life skills. And so with receiving all of these kinds of services, we're just hoping to kind of do our very best to help people with a variety of needs, but it takes a little bit of time. So keeping clients with us in an environment where they can constantly grow, that has a high level of support and accountability, and then where they can also develop a new community of friends and change behaviors in a safe space.
Mm-hmm. How have you seen your work, or more broadly, the work in your field, change as a result of Measure 110?
There have been several other culturally specific resource centers that have been funded and opened and have grown and flourished. And so that's been quite exciting, as well as with us. We're one of those organizations that have received funding and has been able to use the funding in a way that helps to support the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are there aspects of your work that you find are misunderstood?
I would say the amount of time that it takes to change behavior. I mean, sometimes people have thought, I would say, that you go into a clinic, you spend some time there, and then you come out on the other side and you are now living this drug-free life. It's work every day to make the right choices. It's work every day to do something different. So it requires creating a community. It requires changing habits. And so I would say that sometimes people may not know how much work is put into supporting people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where do you see Oregon Change Clinic growing from here?
Let's see. We are expanding our clinic. So right now, we are doubling the size of our clinic because we have truly outgrown our current location. So we want to be able to help more people and we need more space. So we're doubling the size of the clinic in that way. We're also helping with long-term housing. So one of the challenge areas, Althea, has been that when people are in treatment and then, and we've extended it from 3 months to 6 months to give people more opportunity. And then from there, they graduate from our program, and long-term housing has been a challenge. Where do people live where they can still have ongoing support and accountability as needed? And so where we're growing is in that space. We're looking to have long-term housing for those who have completed our program but still continue to need some support.
Mm-hmm. What do you wish people knew about your work?
What I would like people to know is that because we are one of the few, and some will say the only, we are primarily, our clientele are primarily African-American men, actually, but we're the only African-American treatment facility here in the Portland metro area. And so for those who believe that this could be a right fit for them or someone that they know, I'd love for them to be able to contact us and see how we can help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, on that note, if listeners are interested in finding out more about Oregon Change Clinic or what we've talked about today, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can pull us up on the website. They can find us at OregonChangeClinic.com, and we're located in Portland, Oregon. And they can also call us. They can call us directly. They can call us at 503-719-7985, 503-719-7985, or they can go to our website.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
You know, I would say, Althea, although, you know, I'm in the work every day, I don't always think about it, but it's moments like this when I just kind of step out of the work and think about just always hope that we're making a difference in the community that I grew up in and in my hometown here, and that if there's anyone out there that is needing services, I'm hoping that we could help.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, Shannon. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate being here.
That was Shannon Jones Isidore, CEO and founder of Oregon Change Clinic, providing treatment and temporary housing to BIPOC Portlanders. More information is online at OregonChangeClinic.com. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings. Are listening to KBOO News In Depth. Oregon State Senators advanced Senate Bill 1596 on Tuesday, the Right to Repair Act, with a vote of 25-5. The bill now heads to the Oregon House of Representatives. Back in January, State Senator Jeanine Salmon announced her intention to reintroduce the bill at a press conference. The legislation would require electronics manufacturers to make tools, parts, manuals, and documentation available to consumers and independent repair shops. Currently, that's not a given, and companies and consumers create a lot of e-waste because they can't or they aren't allowed to repair their electronic devices. Senator Salmon explains.
Cell phones, laptops, small electronic appliances, we all have them. And we've experienced those frustrating moments when it gets cracked, a screen gets cracked, or something, a button maybe isn't working, or something happens and breaks off. It might be little, it may be big, but what we want to do is make sure that we provide the opportunity for Oregonians to have choice in where they have that repaired and if they can have that repaired. And so this policy really is about making sure that Oregonians have that freedom of choice, that they can still send it back to the manufacturer if that's something that they would like. They could repair it themselves if they're so able to do so. Or if they have a trusted partner in a local small business, they could certainly take it to them and have it repaired. This policy is about saving families money. It's about supporting those small businesses. It's about reducing the e-waste and cutting pollution, as well as closing that digital divide. It's really important policy that I'm excited to work with many of my colleagues on. And again, it's just about, this isn't a partisan issue that was pointed out. Other states have passed policy such as this, and they have bipartisan support. I'm really excited to work on a policy that 70% of Oregonians surveyed said they support, that they want. And those 70% are Democrats, Republicans, independents, and non-affiliated voters. Again, with the belief that if they own something, they should be able to fix it. And it's really about serving Oregonians and their product and making sure that they can do that in a cost-effective way. And we're really not asking manufacturers to create anything new. This is something that if they already have a repair process, they may already have a partnership with an authorized dealer. We're just saying that you need to then provide that information to consumers and to third-party independent store owners so that they can then have the right to fix consumers' and Oregonians' products as well.
In 2023, similar legislation passed in California, Colorado, Minnesota, and New York. Advocates for right to repair say it's also critical to address climate change, save consumers money, and help bridge Oregon's digital divide. In previous years, electronics companies have opposed this type of legislation. Google, which makes Pixel phones and tablets, announced its support for the bill in Oregon, though. Steven Nickel is Google's Devices and Services Director of Operations.
Today, Google is excited to reaffirm our commitment to repairability and our support for the right to repair movement by endorsing proposed Oregon right to repair legislation that offers a compelling model for other states to follow. We applaud the efforts of Senator Salmon in advancing a common sense repair bill. This legislation represents an inclusive compromise that brings together tech companies, small repair companies, environmental leaders, and legislators to find common ground for the repair movement. It provides a victory for consumers who want affordable repair options, for the environment and its emphasis on sustainability, and for companies that believe repairability truly matters to us all. Google's mission to make the world's information accessible and useful to everyone has shaped how we've designed our consumer electronics devices and also how we repair them. Simply put, we strive to make repair universally accessible and useful for our customers and have made the investments and forge the partnerships required to achieve these goals. Repair must be easy for everyone, whether they are technicians or do-it-yourselfers. This requires that we, as manufacturers, design products in a manner that enables simple, safe, and reliable repairs wherever and by whomever they are performed. Our efforts to make repair accessible and useful focuses on three pillars: parts, tools, and instructions. First, with parts, we ensure that parts for our phones are accessible to the public. We also do not require burdensome, restrictive parts pairing, meaning that a properly installed screen or battery will work no matter who is doing the repair. We believe this enables small businesses and local repairers to thrive and grow. We have also consistently reduced the cost and number of repair tools required for our devices, and we've also made them available now online for anyone to purchase. And lastly, we provide our repair manuals online as well to anyone for free to guide them through the repair process. Along with these efforts, we will continue expanding our partnerships with independent repair providers to enable even greater access to repair for our customers. A great example of this is our partnership with U-Brake iFix, with whom we offer same-day repair support at over 700 locations across the U.S. Google is committed to continue improving repairability through our product designs, our repair programs, and also our public engagements. And we really appreciate the efforts of policymakers, like we see here in Oregon in Senator Solman's bill, to help move the entire industry toward a more sustainable and repairable future.
Repair-friendly policies also mean saving Oregonians money. The nonpartisan organization Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, or OSPIRG, researched this. They found that fixing phones, computers, and appliances, instead of buying new ones, could save the average Oregonian household $382 a year. That adds up, too. By their count, the right to repair could save $650 million statewide per year. Charlie Fisher is the state director of OSPIRG.
At OSPIRG, we started working on this issue 5 years ago for the same reason we're still working on it today. It just makes sense that if you own something, you should be able to do what you want with it, and we should be able to fix our stuff. Right to repair is also good for the environment, it's good for consumers and household budgets, and it's good for increasing access to technology. So since right to repair was first introduced in the Oregon legislature in 2019, it's continued to be a growing movement here and across the country. And at the end of 2022 and through 2023, other states have finally started to take action. California, Colorado, Minnesota, and New York have now all passed various forms of right to repair laws. I mention this because the conversation in Oregon has been informed by what has happened in other states. We've learned lessons about what to do as well as what not to do. And since the end of the last session here in Oregon, we've spent a lot of time hearing from a variety of stakeholders about how to craft the best possible bill. And so now I'm excited to be standing with a really strong coalition supporting what we hope will be the strongest right to repair bill in the country.
There have been previous iterations of the right to repair bill, and this iteration specifically addresses the issue of part pairing. That's a practice that gives a manufacturer the ability to discourage or even totally prevent certain parts from being swapped out. Roman Godin is the co-owner of Hyperion Computer Works in Southwest Portland.
We serve our local community by offering repairs for computers and various other electronics. We interact with an average of 100 individuals and their broken devices every month, helping them navigate the financial and logistical hurdles that accompany the pursuit of repair. One of the challenges we've always faced in our day-to-day work has been getting access to the parts and documentation we need to execute repairs for the wide variety of devices we see. Lately, a new trend has emerged that is often referred to as parts pairing. Some manufacturers assign a serial number to parts and use software locks so that the part can only be used with that one specific device. If you have one iPhone with a broken screen and another that won't turn on, you would think that you could repurpose the screen from the dead phone, but it's not that simple. After replacing the screen, you won't have all the features that you used to have, and you'll get a repeated nagging prompt that the system can't tell whether or not the parts are genuine. When you have your device repaired at an authorized service center, they're running a software tool to calibrate or pair the new part. Those tools aren't available to the public or to independent repair shops. The parts pairing practice stifles fair competition. When I tell somebody that they might face this or that inconvenience by having me do the repair instead of the manufacturer, they're likely to take the more certain route through the manufacturer. I've gone through the expense of marketing to reach someone with a device for me to fix, only for the work to fall through over an arbitrary restriction. When they're available, the lower cost of used parts can make or break whether or not a repair fits within someone's budget, not to mention the ecological impact of being forced to discard parts that still work. This legislation levels the playing field so that Oregonians can choose who will fix their electronics, whether that's themselves, their friendly neighborhood repair shop, or the manufacturer's authorized service provider.
Right to repair is an issue that has seen broad bipartisan support. In 2023, the bill in Oregon garnered 40 co-sponsors, though it didn't pass. State Representative Courtney Nieren also supports the measure.
Imagine not being able to take your car to a shop for simple repairs or new parts, or not being able to call a repair service to fix an old refrigerator or dishwasher. The cost of entire replacements would be extreme and often unnecessary, especially when the skills and parts to fix them can keep a local business going and reduce waste. I believe Oregon consumers deserve the same ability to repair our technology devices, and that our policies must discourage throwaway and single-use culture, especially when it comes to e-waste. This bill will keep countless devices out of landfills, remove pressure on consumers to purchase costly new devices, and reduce planned obsolescence. It will reduce electronic waste and have positive impacts on consumers and local businesses. When electronics manufacturers control the marketplace by limiting tools, parts, and information, it is hard for consumers and local repair shops to do simple and affordable fixes. More Oregonians repairing existing electronics can mitigate the environmental impact of electronics manufacturing as well. Extending the life of electronic products lessens this impact and protects our environment. This bill gives consumers and repair specialists the right to access those tools, parts, and information needed to repair those electronic products. Having the right to repair will allow Oregonians to reuse devices, save money, and support local businesses. It is a common sense bill that supports the efficient use of resources through product life extension. Electronics devices are increasingly important fixtures of modern life. They keep us connected to our families, friends, education, and jobs. We use them for necessities and conveniences. Fixing these devices instead of filling our landfills could save Oregon consumers hundreds of dollars a year. And in a time when many Oregonians struggle to stretch their dollars each month, the right to repair legislation is the right thing to do.
Senate Bill 1596 now heads to the Oregon House of Representatives for consideration after passing the state Senate on Tuesday. The short legislative session in Oregon ends on March 10th, 2024. For KBU News in Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBU Community Radio invites you to participate in our celebration of our dear, precious, and incomparable animal besties. During the week of February 19th and February 23rd, we will be honoring our animal friends and family with